Time was too tight to worry about such things. The sounds of the Waldville grew louder and more oppressive as they drew closer, until they were almost directly beneath the walls, and one of the SMG posts mounted along its length. Keeping an army this big under wraps was one of Jack's worries, but their own fear served them well. The atmosphere was so unnerving that it kept them very cautious and in cover. Jack reached the pipe first, and under his direction they made enough torches to keep the tunnel well lit for all of them. They would have to string out and take their time getting down into the sewer itself. There wasn't enough space for a force this big to move quickly in the confines of the sewers. At the bottom of the incline, he directed the swamp dwellers as they descended. They set off, following his directions, with torches blazing. Talk was kept to a minimum, in case some noise traveled upward. All the while, Jack mused on the one problem. The narrow service shaft that led up into the walled yard behind the dormitory building would only allow for one fighter at a time to ascend, so it would take some time for all his insurgents to make it up to the surface. Time. That was the problem. Jack could mount sentries to warn of anyone who came close to the building, perhaps even take out with stealth those that stumbled upon them. But he could do nothing to cut down that stretch of time. Time for an alarm to be raised. Time for a security force to come and wipe them out. Marissa was the last to descend, having stayed up top to see the others down safely, and Jack gave her the briefest of nods before picking his way through the rebel force to the point where the first fighters were now wading through the effluent from the ville. As Jack had directed, Prideaux was at the head, making sure they took the correct turns at sewer pipe junctions. The alcohol with which they had doused their torches was taking the edge off the stench in the sewer, but the smell of fear was still pervasive. Prideaux greeted Jack with a nod of the head. They were only a few hundred yards from the service shaft. When they reached the shaft, Jack and Prideaux halted the first wave.
I'll go first. Scout the area, then signal.
Prideaux nodded, and watched as Jack scaled the ladder into the dark, claustrophobic tunnel. He pushed against the metal cover, felt it give under the pressure. Gently, Jack moved it so that he could squeeze out. The yard was empty, the building beyond in darkness. It looked clear. Jack scanned the walls, listened carefully to try to pick out anything other than the usual sounds of activity behind their brick confines. Yet he was aware of some instinct gnawing at the pit of his stomach, telling him that there was something very wrong. Jack eased himself out of the service tunnel and stretched aching muscles as he scanned the yard. There was no time to crawl back down and tell them that he was making a wreck of the area. While Jack began to move swiftly and silently to the walls, searching for a quick and quiet way in which he could scale them and check out what was going on beyond the yard, Prideaux was down the bottom of the shaft. He could see the night sky framed by the circle of the service hatch, the few stars shining through the scudding clouds. Prideaux felt an overwhelming desire to escape the sewer. Jack had disappeared from view. He hadn't turned back and told them that there was some kind of problem. Prideaux decided to get up the ladder and take a look himself. Scooting up the metal rungs, greedily gulping down the cold night air as it hit him, he poked his head out of the service hatch, looking around for Jack. He could see the albino over by the far wall. Prideaux guessed correctly that he was taking a wreck of the area, but not that he wanted the gorillas to wait until he had finished. Too eager to get out of the sewer, Prideaux darted out of sight, slipping down the ladder so that he reached the bottom quickly. Jack heard something and turned quickly, but Prideaux was already gone. At the bottom of the shaft, Prideaux started to send up the army. 50 people would take some time to move if he sent them one at a time, so he didn't bother. Knowing Jack was above, he sent them up on the heels of each other, so there were 4 on the ladder at any given time. Up in the yard, Jack was scrambling up a wall in order to look over at the alley beyond. He was only halfway up when he heard the mass exodus begin from the service tunnel. Momentarily stunned, he froze on the wall, turning his head to see the gorillas pouring out of the service tunnel. They were easy targets if anyone was watching. Which suddenly, Jack realized had to be the case.
Get to cover!
The rebels turned when Jack yelled, and then started to scatter as the tops of the walls began to explode in light and sound. The Sec Chief Diamond's team had positioned themselves at the foot of each of the 3 walls, spread out, and with ladders they could use to scale the walls with speed. Ladders hit the walls, and sentries were scaling them before they had even struck the brick at the crest of the wall. AK-47s and MP-5s were the blaster of choice, with a few Uzis thrown in. Anything that could lay down a good suppressing SMG fire. They wanted to prevent the rebels from making a break for the dormitory building and finding cover. There were SecMen waiting in the street beyond. Dr. Jean wanted the rebel army annihilated and the rebel leaders to be captured alive if possible, with a view to sacrifice. That wouldn't be easy if the guerrillas could hole up in the dorm. As the companions drew near to the Waldville, it became apparent that something was happening within.
What do you suppose is going on in there? Why have they suddenly changed?
Christy shook her head.
It's not that. It's a different kind of feeling. Anticipatory, like they were on the verge of something. Like they know the rebels are coming, even though they're not there yet.
On their way toward the Waldville, they had talked on the run about how best to tackle both the Ville and the rebel army. The problem was that Jack and the Swamp Dwellers had thought the companions long departed, and if they attempted to catch up with them while they were in the sewers, then the rebels could assume they were being attacked from behind. At the worst, they would also alert the security within the Ville of their presence. But from the looks of things, this last argument no longer mattered. But the problem of approaching the rebel fighters without sparking friendly fire still existed. Now their task was laid bare. To follow the guerrillas would be pointless, as they would risk being fired on, and they would only be walking straight into the same trap, whatever that may be, that was being set for Jack's people. They now had a twofold task: to gain access to the Waldville without being observed, and to get themselves into a position where they would be able to support the Swamp Dwellers. The second part was easier to achieve than the first. They now stood in the shelter of some ruined buildings that were overlooked by the wall, and were halfway between two SMG posts. Both were manned by impassive sentries in infrared goggles. The wall was of a uniform height all around, and although its ragged construction meant that there were foot and handholds all the way around, the problem was that to use any of these brought a person right out into the open. There was only one gate in and out of the Ville as far as they could see. To try to circle the entire compound looking for any other entrance would be too time-consuming, even assuming that one could be found. In their state of agitation, the people of the Ville had begun to prepare themselves for battle. The guards had also heard the announcement and knew that they would soon be receiving their own orders from Chief Diamond. The Sec Chief had called all sentries off the walls. They knew how the guerrillas were gaining access, and the sentries would be required to take part in the annihilation of the rebel army.
Ryan, I don't believe what I'm seeing. What the fuck is going on?
The bastard's preparing a welcoming party for Jack, that's what. He doesn't know about us. LaRue didn't know about us. And so he's going to use all his men where he thinks the danger's coming from.
Leaving the cover of the ruins, shouldering the stire so that he had both hands free, Ryan sprinted across the small open area between the ruined old city and the walled Ville of Lafayette. Ryan zigzagged low to make himself a harder target, even though he was pretty sure that no one was watching him. Once he was by the wall, he looked up and around, raking his glance along the top of the wall, which was still deserted. Finding handholds and clamping one combat boot to a jutting piece of concrete, he began his ascent. Moving hand over hand, drawing deep and regular breaths as he hauled his body weight upward, the foothold being mostly for balance, he made it to the top in less than a minute. Raising his head slowly above the level at the top of the wall, he could see the Ville spread out beyond him. There was a no-man's land of cleared and trampled earth that extended for 10 yards before the Ville really began. Some of the taller buildings had been visible from outside, poking up over the level of the Sec wall, but most were 2 or 3 stories at most, and were protected from view by the wall. Ryan didn't like the look of the strip of bare earth. They would have to move pretty swiftly to avoid being spotted. On the other hand, the streets and sidewalks he could see were in a state of agitation, so if they could traverse that unseen, then once they were into the throng, they'd be safe. There wasn't really any choice. They had to tackle it that way. Ryan turned, still managing to hug the wall, and beckoned to the others. They came out and started to scale the wall. Christy and JB were quickest, Mildred found it more of a problem, and Doc lagged behind. Ryan stayed in position, but sent them over the wall, until he was left on the outside with Doc, who by this time had just managed to drag himself level with the one-eyed warrior.
I fear, my dear sir, that I am no longer vigorous enough for some of these physical endeavors.
Bullshit, Doc. You're here, aren't you?
And that, of course, is why you felt it incumbent upon yourself to tarry and assist me, is it not?
Just go, Doc.
Ryan watched Doc scramble down and run in a crouch across the bare expanse. From his vantage point, he could see the others waiting for him, and he could see that no one seemed to be paying much attention to the wall, or the stretch of empty ground between. LaVille's focus was inward, directed to where they knew the swamp dwellers would be intruding. Ryan dropped from the wall, landing heavily, and using the momentum to power his run across the empty space. When he reached the others, they moved as one from the boundary of the ville, slipping into the busy streets. They hadn't needed to exchange any words about this maneuver, and they hadn't been spotted as intruders. If the people of the ville had seen them on the edge of the no man's land, they'd assumed they were involved in some sort of preparation for the defense of the ville.
JB, you figure you can find our way from here to where we came up before?
Just follow me.
As JB led them through the streets, they could see the people moving with a sense of purpose. The people were forming phalanxes that would protect their own piece of territory, as though they had been organized into neighborhood gangs protecting their turf. Another thing that Ryan and JB hadn't noticed before, in their haste during the earlier wreck mission, was that these people weren't just detached in the manner of jolt heads and those who were under some kind of hypnosis. They were dying. For the first time, the companions could see the sores and scabs of pox and malnutrition, could see how spindly some of these people were, their flesh wasted by the diseases that ravaged them. Their apparent insularity from one another was as much a byproduct of just coping with the delirium of their diseases as it was their brainwashed state. It meant that although the companions and the Swamp Dweller army were outnumbered, they were probably fitter and faster. The people of the ville weren't used to combat. They were not healthy, and their reflexes would be slow. Their combat skills, if they had any to begin with, would be poor. But even this faint hope was whipped away from their grasp by the sudden sound of blaster fire.
Fuck it. No point trying to slip by unnoticed now. Let's do this fast.
They ran as one, blasters at the ready. They had tried to blend in with their surroundings before, but now they didn't care. They attracted a few confused glances from the citizens who were preparing their defenses, but they were only five, and they were headed toward the firefight, not away from it. How could they be part of the enemy force? The insularity of the brainwashed citizens allowed the companions this swift and unimpeded path, with JB leading the way.
Dark night. It's like a blasted bear pit.
Yeah, we still might save the bear.
Choosing whatever cover they could find, the other four companions started to fire on the set force, who were suddenly torn by the activity to their rear. Some tried to turn and fire on the attackers to their rear, falling off the wall and into a hail of fire as they did so. Others tried to ignore the fire behind them, hoping or assuming that someone else would cover them as they continued their assault on the swamp dwellers. Mildred and JB moved behind Ryan, Christy, and Doc, coming out of cover and running back so that they could double around the maze of alleys that ran behind the buildings. Each block in the ville was made up of four streets, forming a square, with alleyways linking the sidewalks at the front of each building. From their initial position, they could fire on two of the three walls that were swarming with Lafayette Sec men, but this still left one wall from which the Sec force could fire on the swamp dwellers with impunity. It was this problem that JB and Mildred sought to address. By moving around the alley, they intended to attain a position from which they could hit that wall, one from which an uninterrupted stream of fire was raining down into the yard and onto the rebels.
Hope you know where we're going, John.
Trust me, and hold back when I say.
Mildred was about to ask him why, but saved her breath for running when she saw him dip into the canvas bag he carried. He took out two grenades, both of which were shrapnel models. As well as their explosive power, they could spread razor-sharp, white-hot shards of metal in a large radius. It was a gamble. Tossing the grenades into the alley would give the pair little or no time to escape, and the enclosed space would ensure maximum damage from the explosions. But the force would also take out part of the wall, and the danger was that some of the shrapnel would take out some of the rebels.
Get back!
JB pulled the pins on both grenades and tossed them underhand into the alley, so that they would keep a low trajectory, centering their impact at around three-quarter height on the wall. Mildred hugged the wall, shutting her eyes from the light of the blast, opening her mouth to stop the pressure of the sound wave, blocking her ears. JB came around with a mini-Uzi in his hands. He aimed for groups of guards as they staggered out of the clouds of dust. Some of them were ripped to shreds, bleeding from wounds caused by the shrapnel, screaming incoherently as pain and blood blinded them. Some had missing limbs, others were crawling on stumps. Loss of blood alone would kill many. Those that remained in some way mobile now found themselves walking into the Uzi fire, and the carefully chosen shot from the ZKR as Mildred stood behind JB. Her concentration was broken by the sound of approaching vehicles from behind. She left JB and ran back to the corner of the alley. She could see three WAGs, each carrying a contingent of sentries, speeding toward them. If they stayed in position, they would be trapped.
John, pull back! Backup's arrived! Too many for us!
Still firing to prevent any stragglers advancing on them, JB followed her backward, turning and twisting along the maze of alleys that would take them back to the others. JB suddenly stopped firing, sure that he had spotted a familiar face among the dust and debris. Was that Prideaux? Were some of the rebels using the gap blasted in the wall to make their escape? It was too late to do anything about that now. He could hear the WAGs come to a halt, and the SEC horses start to pound the sidewalk. When the attack started, Jack had cursed Prideaux for taking the army out of the sewer before he had completed a full wreck. His drive for survival had kicked in with his first shout, rendering everything else secondary. Jack could see the battle begin in front of him, as if in slow motion. Perhaps it was only the speed of his own reflexes as he watched and assessed that made it seem that way. But nonetheless, he urged his ragged army to move faster. They were all clear of the maintenance hatch now, and for any of them to attempt to scramble back down would be tantamount to suicide. The only thing they could do was stand and fight. But where could there be cover, here in this completely open yard? Jack had found some cover himself, and in many ways there were only two obvious answers. Hug the walls or head for the dormitory building. Casting an appraising glance, Jack could see that the guards were using all three walls to fire over with SMGs. That meant that to fire at a downward angle of 180 degrees straight down the wall, the men on the crest of the wall would have to lean right over to sight and fire, making themselves obvious targets. It gave anyone up against the wall a slight respite and the opportunity to fire up and along, catching sentries before they had a chance to realign. There seemed to be no one coming through the dormitory building to either storm the yard or to establish it as another command point from which to fire on the rebels. Did that mean that Dr. Jean didn't trust his men to meet the rebels face to face without the protection of the wall? Or was it just an oversight? Either way, it didn't matter. If the rebels could get out of the yard, then they could either use that to mount a siege or get through it and out into the streets before the guards had a chance to move on them.